From NPR News in Washington, I'm Pam Coulter. Libya is facing increasing international criticism for its bloody crackdown on anti-government protesters. The Associated Press says security forces opened fire on people attending a funeral for some protesters in Benghazi. A Libyan doctor in that city told NPR it was a massacre.
For up to now, 20 people have been died, and I think this number will be increased because there are a lot of people in a serious situation in the operation theater and in the ICU room. So I expect they will be die at any moment.
The son of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi went on state TV today to say the protests could lead to civil war, and the army supports his father. Libyans living outside the country are keeping close watch on events at home. NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro is in Cairo.
So much of the information that we're hearing out of Libya is coming from expats that live all around the world. And of course, because there is a large border that's shared between Libya and Egypt, there are many Libyans who live here. And they held a protest today in front of the Libyan embassy. They had spoken to their families. Many of them are from Benghazi, the eastern city, which has been the seat of a lot of the unrest that we've seen over the past few days. And they have said that they have grave concern. They've called what is happening there a massacre. We've heard hundreds of people have been killed. The hospitals there are overrun, and the situation is increasingly precarious and dire.
Lourdes Garcia Navarro in Cairo. After 7 weeks of nationwide protest, Jordan's King Abdullah is urging his government to introduce quick, real political reforms. In Amman, Dale Gavlak says while analysts call it a step in the right direction, they add it does not go far enough.
Abdullah says a new election law must be introduced to increase Jordanians' political participation. The absolute ruler said the move would see effective political parties established and open competition for cabinet posts. Currently, Jordan has 40 splinter groupings, including communists, leftists, and Muslim fundamentalists. But Abdullah did not say if he would give up his power to appoint the prime minister as demanded by protesters here. He also pledged to tackle corruption and cronyism. Protesters inspired by Tunisia and Egypt have demanded wider democratic freedoms and lower prices. For NPR News, I'm Dale Gavlak in Amman.
A winter storm is making travel difficult across the upper Midwest. More than 700 flights were canceled today at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, which expected to get up to 20 inches of snow. More than 200 flights were canceled in both Chicago and Detroit. Officials of several states also warned people to stay off the highways. Trevor Bayne won today's Daytona 500. At age 20, he is the youngest winner ever. This is NPR. Despite a sixth straight day of protests, Wisconsin GOP Governor Scott Walker continues to support a bill that would strip public employees of their collective bargaining rights. He told Fox News Sunday he and his fellow Republicans believe they're doing the right thing to address a budget gap. The measure also calls for government workers to contribute more to their health and pension costs. Residents of Britain and the Netherlands lost more than $5 billion in the collapse of an Icelandic bank during the credit crunch. In London, Larry Miller reports a repayment deal is now up in the air.
Iceland's parliament approved the 30-year payback deal earlier this week. However, President Ólafur Grímsson refused to sign the bill, triggering a second national referendum on the issue. Britain and Holland want Iceland to reimburse them for funds they used to cover their citizens' deposits in the failed internet bank Icesave, which attracted foreign customers by offering very high interest rates. Grímsson acknowledges the new repayment terms are better than an earlier deal rejected in a first referendum, but insists it's still up to the citizens to decide. There's deep resentment in Iceland over paying the money back, but not doing so creates uncertainty over the island's economic recovery. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
A New York man who lost his wallet when he was working for the New York Times got it back 40 years after it disappeared. Rudolf Resta was working for the Times in 1970 when his wallet was taken from his jacket that was in a closet. Last fall, a security guard found the wallet, apparently abandoned by the thief who kept the cash. Pam Coulter, NPR News, Washington.